We're delighted to bring you a special broadcast this week produced by Richard Ziegler and Barry Yeoman. They're going to take us back into the musical past of the U.S. to the days when Creoles from down in southwest Louisiana adapted French accordion music with blues, Haitian music, and rhythm and blues. The focus of this program begins during World War II, when Creoles, who sang and danced to the music, moved from Louisiana to California and gave birth to a Zydeco nation. You'll hear the stories of many of the players and dancers who still live this music. You'll meet older Louisiana natives such as Queen Ida, Ray Stevens, and R.C. Carrier, who know the music well. A visit to ZydecoNation.org will allow you to find out more about the music and the musicians. A historical and cultural as well as musical experience awaits you in the next hour as we take you to Zydeco Nation, a special edition of Primetime Radio.
Then after I got home, I was going to pick up some fish for my sister-in-law on a Monday. And the white policeman came over and asked me why I was not working. I told him I was working at Saginaw Malibu Line Company. He said, "Where is that?" And he said, "I never heard of that." I said, "That's in Michigan." He said, "Oh," he said, "all the work we got here for you niggas?" He said, "You going way over there?" He said, "Well, I'm going to tell you something, boy." He took me, he said, at 12 o'clock, he said, they need some people down there on Broad Street. He said, "When I get there," he said, "you better be there working." And he let me out of the car. He said, "Go change your clothes." That's a train called the Sunset Limit out of New Orleans into California. The Sunset Limit run at 12:01. I packed my few little rags for my sister-in-law's house. She still haven't got a fish. I called the train station and told him that I wanted a ticket to Oakland, California. When I caught the bus and ran on down to the train station, when I got up there, the station master says to me, "I said, why didn't you tell me you was a nigga?" He said, I got to write your ticket all over again. So he wrote my ticket. By the time he wrote my ticket, the train was leaving. So when he gave me the ticket, I had to run at least 400 or 500 feet to catch the tail end of the train. So I got in the white part of the train. I had to walk all the way to the black part of the train. I had to catch the train and get on out of it. I wound up in jail.
I'm Richard Ziegler, and you're listening to Zydeco Nation. It was 1944 when Ray Stevens caught that train. It took him from Lake Charles, Louisiana to Oakland, California, and he became part of what's now known as the Great Migration. Between 1915 and 1970, some 6 million Americans of African descent left their homes in the South. They moved to industrial powerhouses like Detroit, to great northern cities like New York, and many moved out west, to the state that embodies the American dream, California. Among the migrants, one group stood out. Like Stevens, they came from the rice and cane fields of South Louisiana. They spoke French as their first language, and in some cases, their only language. Many of these migrants called themselves Creole. Starting in World War II, French Creoles laid down their farm tools and started looking west. Northern California offered shipyard jobs and the promise of better futures, and they brought with them the music of their home. It was a dance music played on the washboard and accordion, full of French, African, and Haitian rhythms mixed with American rhythm and blues. They called this music Zydeco, from the French word for green beans. Over the next hour, we'll take you on that Creole migration and introduce you to the Zydeco culture that has taken root in California. We'll visit churches, fraternal halls, people's homes, and we'll talk with the musicians and dancers who keep the scene alive and who wonder how long it can last.
You're listening to Primetime Radio. This week, a special program on the Zydeco Nation with Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler.
Creole is just like jambalaya. A gumbo. My father's people originated from France to Canada.
They came to Louisiana and they merged and they start having kids.
My mother comes in with the more African.
It's its own race, pretty much, you know, because you can't say, oh, I'm black, and you can't say, oh, I'm French, but you can say I'm French Creole. I mean, you have a nice little mixture in there.
We come from a big, big family of French-speaking people who haven't lost our culture. Creoles, we come in all shades and colors.
And it's a language. We speak our own language. We do our own dance. You know, we kind of to ourselves a little bit on certain things. So that's what I figure, you know, Creole is.
In my opinion, they created the Creole in my community where I was to divide people, the black people. If the Creoles, the light-skinned Creoles, hadn't segregated before the war, they hadn't segregated themselves just like the whites.
It's a mixture of nationality, the Creole people are.
Our cooking.
But not exotic if you just go to a relative house. If they know you're coming, it's food for days. If you don't eat, they're going to feed you till you fall asleep.
They are type of people that's very close. And if you think you could get in it, you better give it your best shot.
Let's go back to South Louisiana and East Texas in the mid-20th century. Electricity has just arrived in some places. French can be heard everywhere. Segregation is the law. And farm life is exhausting, planting rice, plowing cotton, cutting cane.
They had a word for it. You go to work from cant to cant. You can't see when you go in, you can't see when you come out. That was some hard days, I tell you. And I was in it since I was about 12 years old.
Wilbert Lewis, Uncle Willie to his friends, is a Zydeco washboard player. He was born in Welch, Louisiana, 85 years ago, and now lives in San Francisco. A few miles down the road lives his sister, the Grammy Award-winning accordion player Queen Ida Guillory. Like many Creole families, theirs started out in Louisiana, but eventually moved across the line to Texas. Here's Queen Ida.
During that time, my mother had a garden, but she had such a large area, they call it a truck patch. And we were in that truck patch morning to night during the time that had to be brought in, the crop brought in from the field. And I can remember shelling sweet peas, black-eyed peas. Oh, the work was ours to do. And my dad being a rice farmer, he had to put the women in the field as well. I was one of them. We worked very hard on the farm. However, weekends, we would go to a Zydeco dance.
As Saturday night approached, men would travel the country roads announcing where the next dance would be held.
Usually somebody would drive by in a car and holler out, you know, let them know who's playing. Or back in my daddy's day, people would ride a horse and ride back and forth and say, who's going to be playing?
R.C. Carrier is a 62-year-old washboard player. He comes from a prominent South Louisiana musical family and now lives in Crockett, California.
You'd have somebody that would push all the chairs, tables and chairs in the house into one bedroom. And somebody would cook a big pot of duck gumbo or goose gumbo. And everybody would, the musicians and stuff would come into the living room, and people from miles around would come around, and we all would dance and party and eat. We would party till maybe 1 or 2 in the morning and dance, and different musicians would switch off if they could play something. Mom and Pop would beat on a pot or a board or a washboard or whatever, and anybody who could play something would jump in and grab something and beat on something, make some noise.
They would drag all the bed in some room for the children to go to sleep. They wouldn't want to sleep because sometimes they was dance all night. The sun was rise, red sun was coming.
That's Lena Petrie. She's the matriarch of the Louisiana Creole community in Northern California. Everyone here calls her Mama Lena. She's 82 and grew up on a cotton farm in Swallow, Louisiana.
Sometimes we walk to the dance because they have an old schoolhouse. They make some dance there, and we walk. Me and my brother go early, we walk, and my mom and daddy come late in the wagon to pick us up. to pick us up. So that's the way it was. No good time, but work hard, dance. Sometimes we didn't have no shoes. We danced barefoot. Sometimes they just have a accordion in a washing bowl. And the old man, he was play dance by himself. He have a old tins, you know, one of them tin thing, put on in his foot, under the foot, and he was pretty accordion. He was singing pretty accordion. Well, we laugh, yeah.
But it wasn't always good times. Families had to choose between educating their children and sending them into the fields. Their hard work didn't always translate into basics like indoor plumbing. And the racial climate was often brutal. One musician Lena Petrie says she used to dance to was Amédée Ardoin. He was a wisp of a man, 5 feet tall, with a clear high voice. He played for white as well as Creole dances, but he was not treated like white musicians were. Here's Lena Petrie.
One night it was so hot, and he played, and he was wet. So they have a white woman on the house. She went and get a towel and give that man a towel for him to, you know, dry himself. And he did that. And they stopped the dance right away. They stopped the dance and he left walking with his accordion on a sack, a pillowcase, put down on his shoulder, they say. That's what my grandpa said. I didn't know. I was not there. And he left walking. Well, he got in the little room. They got a Maltese come. But he thought the Maltese was going to pick him up, give him a ride in Crowley while he was staying. They bumped him till they threw him on the ground, and they passed the Maltese on him all over his body. And so he didn't die. Though. He stayed there, and they wake up. They said, well, you're going to take a towel from a white woman. You're going to remember that.
The story of Amédée Ardoin dates to around World War II. Now, there's considerable dispute over the facts, and it's true the color line in French Louisiana was not quite as rigid as in other parts of the South. Still, racism took a daily toll, even for Creoles born a couple of generations later.
Well, when we lived in Lake Charles, there were 6 of us. And as you can tell, my brothers and sisters were a combination, a little chocolate and a little light and dark.
Charmaine Chavez Thibodeau is 58 and lives in San Bruno, California. She works at a credit union and teaches Creole cooking.
Gary, who's the oldest one, he's really dark. And we had a park across the street from us. I could go swimming, but he couldn't. So he had to stay outside the fence. Same thing with going to restaurants and stuff like that. So anyway, so we would go to my dad's family in the country. And it wasn't as bad there because you knew your place living in Opelousas. You were in your neighborhood and stuff like that.
For some living under Jim Crow, California looked appealing. The reality of the Golden State was more complicated, though. More on that when we come back to Zydeco Nation. I'm Richard Ziegler.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Zydeco Nation, produced by Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler. Our website, aarp.org/radio, contains past broadcasts as well as some videos of our shows and material there wasn't time to include in the regular broadcast. And for a music-rich experience as part of this special, we suggest a visit to aarp.org/Zydeco and ZydecoNation.org. This is Primetime Radio. You're listening to Primetime Radio. This week, a special program on the Zydeco Nation with Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler. visit their website at zydeconation.org. The Great Migration of Southern Blacks began as a trickle. By World War II, it was more like a swelling river. Journalist Isabel Wilkerson called it the first big step the nation's servant class ever took without asking. For Louisiana Creoles, California was the promised land. There were jobs in the shipyards, as well as the recently desegregated defense industry. Queen Ida Guillory was 18 when her family moved to San Francisco in 1947. Her father had grown rice for most of his life and didn't want to leave the crop completely behind.
He was afraid they didn't have the kind of rice that we were bringing over. So he packed the truck up with his rice and all the rest of the furniture, and we got to California. When we got to the border, he asked my dad, "Do you have any grain?" You know, because we had two trucks and a car and a pickup, whatever. It was a convoy. And my dad said, "Yes, I have rice." "Oh, no," he says, "you might as well start unloading." And this was about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when we got to the border. My dad says, wait a minute, I got permission from the agriculture in Sacramento. He said, "I got my letter." He grabbed his letter and he gave it to the inspector. Inspector read it, he goes, "Good thinking." He said, "Now you won't have to unload it."
Ray Stevens, on the other hand, left everything behind. Chased out of Lake Charles by a racist police officer, the Navy veteran arrived in Oakland on the Sunset Limited, hoping to make a new start.
I was in Louisiana with rigid segregation, and I got here, and I thought I was free. I didn't see no signs. No colored people allowed, all that kind of stuff. And I didn't see no colored and white bathrooms. I didn't see no colored sign for the restaurant. But when I got to Oakland, it would be like New York City with all the cars and streets with no stop sign. Louisiana had stop signs for segregation. No blacks and dogs allowed. I understood that. Over here, it was most subtle. They didn't have the sign there, but you better not come in because you wasn't going to get no service. I went to the real estate office in 1948 and asked the real estate man to buy a house in San Leandro. And he says to me, Italian man, he says in a very polite way, they were segregated too. "You can't buy that now." He said, "But maybe one day. They only let you buy in the lower part." We all come here with nothing. We were struggling living in a segregated area just like we was at home. And we worked and worked and worked until we stopped buying segregated housing.
They kept coming for decades. Lena Petrie, who used to dance barefoot in the schoolhouse, arrived in the 1960s. So did a young woman named Betty LeBlanc, who showed up from Lafayette, Louisiana with her veteran husband. Charmaine Chavez Thibodeau, whose dark-skinned brother couldn't swim in their neighborhood pool, came as a teenager in 1966. 2,000 miles from home, they formed a community in exile. They got together at homes, churches, and private clubs, and they did what Creoles do. They spoke French, ate gumbo, played music,
and they dance.
And a group of people that all knew each other. They could hug, kiss, with all among each other. And very little drinking, but a whole lot of dancing and eating.
50 years later, Betty LeBlanc can still close her eyes and travel to her first house parties.
I smell gumbo, red beans and rice, cornbread, and I remember all those good old pies, homemade pies they used to make. Jambalaya. Oh, yeah. I smell all of that. And I hear the music. I hear the music. If I feel sad, it lifts me up. Zydeco is addicted. And if you dance that Zydeco, you forget everything. All kind of problems you have, it make you forget it. Might come back, but at least for that little while, you forget everything.
You're listening to Zydeco Nation, a one-hour primetime radio special.
The big events were the Catholic Church dances, All Hallows and St. Michael's in San Francisco, St. Benedict's in Oakland, St. Francis of Assisi in East Palo Alto, and St. Mark's in Richmond, whose events Mama Lena Petry and her husband organized starting in the 1960s. When Clifton Chenier, considered the most influential Zydeco musician of all time, visited from Louisiana, he would stay with the Petries, and he would always make sure to play his accordion at St. Mark's.
You see, we come from where we come from, the crawfish got sore. You see, I'm walking down the highway, they pick their paws up and say, "Don't you hit me." You know what? We're going in the alley now. Yeah. We're going to get... We're going way down in the woods, baby. Why the crawfish got sold, I ain't lying.
That was one of the first ones that we went to, was St. Mark.
Charmaine Chavez Thibodeau.
Everybody came far away just to come to the church dance because that was one of the main places where you seen all of the people from Louisiana. So you knew who you were going to see, and you wanted to be there with these people to dance, because some of these people can dance. Like, you get mesmerized by just watching them dance. I get so crazy. There's people there, but you don't really see the people because you kind of get in your own zone. And when you dance, you're in your zone, and it's like you're on a cloud. Partners that I would dance with, they'd say, "I don't know where you are, but it sure feels good to dance with you."
Once I find out there's a church dance, probably a week or two in advance, I usually prepare the whole week. I'm looking for my boots. I'm shining up my boots, finding me some jeans, because it's a Western kind of relaxed atmosphere.
Warren Simeon came to California from Lebeau, Louisiana, and worked in the airline industry. When he arrived in 66, there was already a lively Zydeco scene.
All Hallows church dance, as I remember. You could feel, once you park in your car, you can hear the music. And I start just feeling good. Then you can smell the gumbo before you get into the hall. And the first thing I would look around, I'd step in there, it's a lot, just people just smiling. You feel safe. You don't feel intimidated. Like, say, if you walk into a nightclub, the atmosphere is different. You feel like you got the case, the place out. But in the Zydeco Church Hall, when you walk in, that's why I always say it's sacred. First thing you're going to do, you're going to shake hands, you're going to greet each other, and people gonna say hello, we gonna have a good time. And then me, I usually find the kitchen, because I love to get a good bowl of gumbo. Maybe I'll drink a beer or something and relax, and you just zydeco all night long till the band stops.
Simeon isn't the only one to call those dances sacred. Here's Betty LeBlanc.
One of the highest fever that you could ever wish to have inside of your body. You can't control it. It controls you. That's what zydeco do to you. To me, for sure. I've been there. You know, just like you're going to church, you've heard of the Holy Ghost Spirit, but that's what comes over you. The Holy Ghost Spirit is just a part of you shaking, and you don't know why you're shaking, and you don't know why you can't help yourself. And that's what zydeco do. Good zydeco do that to you.
And in one sacred, raucous church hall, a sharecropper's daughter became an international star. Stay tuned to Zydeco Nation.
You're listening to Zydeco Nation, a one-hour primetime radio exclusive produced by Richard Ziegler and Barry Yeoman. You can see photos and listen to more audio and meet the musicians and dancers at aarp.org/Zydeco and ZydecoNation.org.
All right, now.
Primetime Radio is a production of AARP. Our producer is Angel Ivas, assistant producer John Allen. Our engineer is Ben Pizzito. I'm Mike Cuthbert in Washington. You're listening to Zydeco Nation. You'll hear the stories of many of the players and dancers who still live this music, a one-hour primetime radio special.
After they settled into San Francisco, rice and all, Ida Guillory's family kept their Louisiana ties. Her mother made the four-day trek back each year. She would return to California with homemade sausages and brand new records. One time, she brought back an accordion.
She said, I bought an accordion, and I brought it here for you boys, my three brothers. And she said, I want you boys to keep the music, keep up the culture. And my younger brother, Al Rapone, he decided, he was always into music. He decided, okay, well, I'm going to learn how to play this accordion by ear, because there's no music written for this Creole and Zydeco music. And of course, as I was stealing his accordion, going over and borrowing it, and then I would bring it back. And my mom used to say, well, keep it up. At first, you know, I was a little afraid, because girls were not allowed to play accordions, violin and piano, fine. That was okay, that was feminine, but not any other instrument.
Like everything's gonna be all right.
I was driving a school bus. The kids would go on a field trip, and I had to sit there and wait for them. Or if I take them to a game, basketball, baseball, whatever it was, I would take the kids. Then, of course, I had to sit there and wait till the game was over. Well, instead of sitting there reading, and I'd take the accordion, and I'd park the bus quite a ways from the field so they wouldn't hear me. You'd be surprised how far that you can hear that accordion. That's how I got most of my training on the bus.
In 1975, Guillory's brothers asked her to play with them at All Hallows. She didn't know there was a news photographer at the church, or that her picture would appear in the Sunday paper. Overnight, she was dubbed Queen Ida.
Queen Ida, queen of the Zydeco music, and queen of the Mardi Gras celebration tonight.
Soon her phone began to ring. Her brother and washboard player, Wilbert Lewis, describes what came next.
The queen got caught. And she panicked. My brother said, oh, no, you got to continue with this music now. So then we started traveling. We did a lot of traveling. We did Saturday Night Live with Pee Wee Herman. We did the Texas City Limit. We traveled all over Europe from France, England, Italy, Belgium, Sweden, even Finland. And you couldn't believe how those people would scream every time the Queen would quit playing one song. Oh, they were just, I mean, the best fan you could ever want to be around with.
By the time Queen Ida won her 1982 Grammy, West Coast Zydeco had jumped the line and spread outside the Creole community. The music and the culture would be changed forever. More on that when we come back to Zydeco Nation. Gator finally found a place to settle down. Found a little woman in a down hometown. Moved from Louisiana to the Frisco Bay. Told everybody here is there to stay.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Zydeco Nation, produced by Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler. Our website, aarp.org/radio, contains past broadcasts as well as some videos of our shows and material there wasn't time to include in the regular broadcast. And for a music-rich experience as part of this special, we suggest a visit to aarp.org/Zydeco and ZydecoNation.org. This is Primetime Radio. You're listening to Primetime Radio. This week, a special program on the Zydeco Nation with Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler. Visit their website at zydeconation.org. Starting in World War II, French-speaking Creoles migrated from Louisiana and Texas to Northern California. The music they brought with them kept them together. One of the stars of the West Coast music scene was Danny Poulard, a meat cutter who arrived in the early 60s and took up the accordion a few years later. He played house parties and church dances in a traditional Creole style that sounded more like Cajun music than contemporary Zydeco. His playing got noticed in some unexpected circles.
What you started to see in the 70s was sort of an aftershock of the blues revival in the 60s and folk revival too. Once people's appetite was whetted for older sounding blues and not just the current rock and roll, that opened up the possibility that somebody like Clifton could get popular outside of the Creole community. He played great blues, and he's a great singer. That was obvious to everybody. You didn't have to be Creole to notice that.
Mark DeWitt learned accordion from Danny Poulard. DeWitt is now an ethnomusicologist at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.
There became this group of people who were really interested in dances from other cultures, and they didn't stop at one. They might have been doing what was called international folk dancing, which was like, you know, 40 songs, 40 countries. Some of these people who are into Balkan dancing or Greek dancing or something like that discovered that, oh, there were these church dances that were happening.
Musicians like Poulard started appearing in documentaries. They were invited to play on the radio and hired by mainstream venues like the Berkeley restaurant Chez Panisse. Zydeco drew crowds, and still does, at a Berkeley music club called Ashkenaz. And Poulard, who was eager to keep Louisiana music alive, began holding Creole and Cajun music jam sessions in his garage.
It was a nice split-level house. And then you go out to the garage, and it was just packed with stuff to the rafters. I mean, instruments, he'd reach up, and any instrument, he would say, you don't need to bring an instrument, I got anything you need. And he was right.
Blair Kilpatrick was one of Poulard's non-Creole students. She now has her own Cajun band, Sauce Piquante.
People would sit on accordion cases and chairs, and there was clothing and just posters and stuff. someone would play something and look up expectantly, and Danny would say, like, so what'd you play just now? And someone would say, oh, well, I was playing Fifi Poncho or something. And he would just look at him and say, no, you weren't. And then he would play it his way. So he was critical. I mean, he wasn't like warm and fuzzy. But the point is, if you were serious and had an honest desire to learn, he would teach you.
He didn't care where they were from. He didn't care what the color of their skin was. You know, if they wanted to come and play, cool. He never charged them anything. For Danny, it was more, you know, were you willing to put in the time? Not just the time practicing and the time learning the musical craft, but also the time just hanging out.
Before he died in 2001, Poulard's jam sessions helped spawn a new generation of musicians, not all of them Creole. More on that when we come back.
This is Primetime Radio and a special program on the Zydeco Nation.
We're at a Saturday afternoon dance in Northern California. Playing the accordion is Andre Theory, the star of the California Zydeco scene. He's the grandson of Mama Lena Petrie and everyone's hope for the next generation. Theory was born in 1979, in time to catch some of Clifton Chenier's last visits to his grandmother's house in California.
Once you have the king, the Zydeco playing, all the rest of the bands gonna want to play wherever he play. So when she got the other bands, everybody wanted to come play from Louisiana. And they used to all stay at the house. And at that time, I was living with my grandmother, so I was right there with the musicians. On the days that was off, she would cook again in that big backyard, and they would play in the back, and we was around it all the time. My grandma had a big porch, and Clifton would sit on there, and they would talk all day. They'd be talking in French all day. So she always wanted my other cousin to play the accordion. So she was like, Clifton, that's going to be the accordion player. And he said, yeah, he going to do something, but that's not the one. He said, him. He pointed to me, and he pulled me. Yeah, he said, because my arms were long, so.
Because he got an arm like this, is long arm. Yeah, Clifton used to touch that arm. Yeah, boy, you're going to be the next Zydeco, boy.
This is Lena Petrie. She remembers her grandson, Andre, watching the musicians who stayed at her home.
He come down there and look at his grandpa. After everybody leave, he say, you know, he say, everybody talk about music. He said, I think I can play. I said, how you can play? You don't know the first key. And he said, I'm lying. His grandpa said, oh, you ain't going to play nothing, Andre. He said, oh, yeah.
And my grandma had an accordion in her closet. And she, like I said before, she wanted my cousin to play. But I would sneak downstairs and sneak in the closet and play. And I would close the door in the closet and sit in the dark and play. So I was playing, you know. And in the closet, my grandpa caught me in there, told me to get out of there. And it was like a reverse psychology thing. Like, when they found out that I could play, my grandpa would say, boy, you can't play. So then I would go, I learn a song, I go down and play for him. Oh, well, you all right. And then I go upstairs and he would brag about me to everybody else.
And he started playing, so my husband said, come downstairs and play me a song. He said, you think I can't play a song? He sit down, so play a waltz. And the little bitty boy, I was watching his little boy yesterday, cut up. And he started playing. He started playing Mighty Dirts. I don't remember all the name of it. Mighty Dirts. My husband said, go ahead, play. Then my husband teasing him a lot. He was a man. Like to tease. And that's why he said, okay, Andre, when I'm gonna die, I want you to play that to my grave. I said, you ain't gonna die. And talking like he was big, like his grandfather all the time. And he started playing that music like that and be with the musician, when the musician from over there come. Boozoo came and he went to play a couple songs with Boozoo on the bandstand. And he left that, he come back, he lay down, put his head on my lap. I said, boy, go with the music. And he was shy little guy. I think he's still shy sometimes. I had to come back where his grandpa died. His grandpa was suffering. He wanted to leave the world. He didn't want to leave the world. And so he asked my daughter, he said, Rose, you think Andre can come and play a song for me in the hospital? Rose said, yeah. So she came, went to the house, get Andre. Andre sat down by his daddy's head. And he played. And so he said, play Mighty Dears. I said, Andre, he wants you to play Mighty Dears, the old song. I said, you still can play that? Oh, he said, oh, yeah. And he played for his grandpa in the hospital. Andre walked with that car in the graveyard. While they was playing, they was putting the cough in the graveyard. And Andre started playing that song. He didn't play Mighty Dears. He played Jolie Blanc French. Then he played another one, I'm Going Home. And that accordion looked like the accordion was trimming like that. And he was crying. I said, go finish and play, Andre. He said, oh, no. He said, I can't do it. I can't do it no more. I said, oh, well. And so that's Andre.
Yeah, this is a little song we call Slow Down. It goes something like this.
You're listening to Primetime Radio. This week, a special program on the Zydeco Nation with Barry Yeoman and Richard Ziegler. Visit their website at zydeconation.org.
Before he was a teenager, there he was playing venues like the 23 Club. It's an old cowboy bar in Brisbane, California, where Betty LeBlanc runs Sunday dances.
23 Club, I was only 11, 12 years old playing with Billy Wilson. They didn't want me in there because of alcohol. But they snuck me up there, and once I played one song, then they fell in love with me. So I could go as long as I didn't go by the bar. With the Creoles, if you didn't play something right or sung right, they would let you know. Because they're really proud. Because you can make them mad and make them smile in the same instant. If you sung a song in perfect with French, their eyes would light up and they'd be smiling. But like, if I wasn't playing right or something, my grandma then would tell me, you know, and I would go and I was really hard on myself. That's why I learned so much. So.
Today, Theory and his band are everywhere. He plays the accordion with his eyes rolled back as if in a trance. He plays clubs and festivals in California and elsewhere, and he's a regular at Eagles Hall, a fraternal lodge in Alameda, California.
Isn't it nice to have Andre Theory in the house here tonight? How many of you remember when Andre used to play with us here when he was starting up? By the way, his mother's in the house tonight. Olivia Killery's in the house over here tonight. And his grandpa's in the house. Mama Nina Pete right over here. I say this, without them, none of this would be going on, anybody. It didn't start here. It started at the church dances that they did it at for many, many years. At St. Mark's, people went to St. Mark's Church. Well, I did, had a good time. So we have Mr. Andre Theory in the house here, everybody. Thank you. This is Andre Theory, Zydeco Magic. Thank you, everybody, for coming in here tonight.
I like that song Andre sang. And when he sang that song,
which one?
It's Jolie Blanc, Ti Quoi Ti Fais. And he sang, I'm Going Home. Oh, my Lord. Ça fait tout quelqu'un crier. That boy make everybody cry, baby. Please believe me. It touches your heart.
That was Betty LeBlanc talking with Wilbert Lewis at the 23 Club. In a community that has lost so many of its original musicians and has only a few young prospects on the horizon, Andre Theory embodies the future. And the future can be an emotional thing.
If anything happens to me,
You guys keep that music going. Tell those young people, grab it. Keep it going. Because they're going to be our future. We got to keep this legacy going. If we don't... And Andre, God bless you, my baby. You got a good future ahead of you. Keep it going. Don't let nobody get in your way. This is from Betty. That's all I can say.
These days, in California, there's no shortage of Zydeco. One weekend begins with Mark St. Mary playing at the No Name Ranch, a black cowboy ranch in Hayward. Up in the hills, the view from the dance floor stretches for miles. Tuesday is Louisiana night at the Berkeley Club Ashkenaz. Andrew Carrier, the 74-year-old son of Creole fiddler Bebe Carrier, throws down a mixture of Zydeco, Creole, Cajun, and country. The next Saturday, Andre Theory and his band play at John's Woodshop, which is exactly that, a commercial woodworking shop in Palo Alto whose owner clears it out once a month for dances. There's salmon grilling, gumbo bubbling, and today, a cake to celebrate Theory's birthday. Many of Theory's Creole elders have come out to the woodshop today. Betty LeBlanc, Ray Stevens, Charmaine Chavez-Thibodeau, Wilbert Lewis. Most of the crowd, though, is newer to this scene. Here's Ray Stevens.
Today, the Zydeco culture is here, but if you go to a dance, you'll never know it was Zydeco and it was a black music. Because out of 150 people, you might find 10 blacks. That blacks here don't know nothing about it, but whites do. If it wasn't for white people attending Zydeco dances, you wouldn't have no Zydeco here. You wouldn't have a big enough audience to pay the band. How do I feel about it? I feel very good about it. It got out of the rice field, and now it's moving on.
This guy made a comment. Zydeco brought more people together than civil rights movement. Think about it. It did.
For Queen Ida and Ray Stevens, preserving the music they carried from home is paramount, even if many of the musicians and dancers are not Creole.
Some of the bands are very good, very good, because they didn't come up with a feel for the music from the word go, but they're getting into it. My hat off to them. They're doing a real good job.
For Andre Theory, the question is more complicated.
When you put somebody that's from the culture, put their music and put it side by side, if you really know what you listen to, it's obvious. It's obvious the difference. I look at it, I don't get mad at people from outside playing. I look at it as flattery, you know? But if nobody from the culture keeps it up, then it's not going to be the culture no more. It's going to be somebody outside the culture doing somebody else's culture, so it's not going to be the same.
Once a lot of the older guys started dying off, then it started to hit me. I was like the last one to carry it on or whatever to some degree, pretty much the only one. Yeah, more and more people start making me realize that I was the one left to carry it on. I say like 85-90% of the Creole community didn't died off, and not just died off physically, but their offspring or kids like me don't carry it on and don't recognize that this is part of their culture. They figure that they're Californians now and they're into what's hip. They don't really know about the history and they really don't care about it.
Many Creoles recognize the irony. As the great California melting pot embraces their music, their identity as a separate culture starts waning. It's a quandary that has faced American migrant groups ever since there was an America. At the 23 Club, Betty LeBlanc tries to preserve that Creole culture at her Sunday afternoon dances. She also feels uncertainty, but she finds hope in the very nature of Creoleness.
Mostly majority of all the Creole people that I've known so far, they all mostly passing away. It all depend on our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, if they want to be recognized as a Creole. It's up to them. I can't read their future. The background is there. The history will be there for them to know all about their root. But it will be an integrating culture. Please believe me. That's what it will be. And it will be a strong one, a very strong one, because they'll have all different nationality in it. And that's what makes things strong, you know, if you really think about it.
With that, LeBlanc and Wilbert Lewis say it's time to dance. It's Saturday, and Andre Theory is playing at the Woodshop in Palo Alto. But first, there is one last song to sing. A reminder that a little Louisiana still lives in the Golden State.
No, you don't want to. You don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I do. Please, pretty please. Sugar on top. Magasin. My t-shirt is dans la ville.
Okay, now we're gonna interpret it.
You do it.
He say he was making love in a barn. In a chicken house, and the marangoin that mom and pop
is in the barn,
and fighting off all the mosquitoes. So
my little sister
is in the city
selling
her little shrimp.
In Northern California, I'm Richard Ziegler.
Zydeco Nation was written and produced by Richard Ziegler and Barry Yeoman. The narration was recorded by Jason Richmond. Fiscal sponsorship provided by the International Documentary Association and Deep Springs College, with funding provided in part by a grant from the California Council for the Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Original train music by Ruben Moreno and Andre Theory. Special thanks to Angel Livas and Larry Gannon of AARP, Mark DeWitt, Barry Ancelet, Will Spires, Keith Woods, Lynn Adrien, Mark David, and John Noltner. You can see photos and listen to more audio and meet the musicians and dancers at aarp.org/Zydeco and ZydecoNation.org. Primetime Radio's engineer is Ben Pizzuto. I'm Mike Cuthbert in Washington.
Oh, yeah, I'm more cafe. I got my own little song. I know.